Well, today we're pleased to have Maria Sepalis, and she has several distinctions in the field. First of all, I think you have one of the largest Facebook groups with 30 plus thousand members called Corporate Optometry. Very impressive. You've helped so many people in corporate settings, commercial settings, and be their advocate, to be their sounding board, to really give the answers that everybody used to be siloed for. And as a private practitioner, I don't really know that much about that side of it. I know that there's a lot of optometrists that are very happy in commercial practice, and there's a lot of advantages. And so I'm looking forward to speaking with you today. And you also have an alliance group. So Maria, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you went to school, and really about your journey and what you're doing now.
Welcome to Eyetrepreneur, the podcast for Wizards of Eyes. I'm Dr. Raymond Brill with my co-host,
Perry Brill, and we're here to bring you stories about Wizards of Eyes. Yes, what is a wizard, Dr. Brill?
Well, these are folks that you may have heard about, may not have heard about. These are people who are actually very successful in doing what they do in all aspects of eye care.
We're not talking to self-proclaimed industry geniuses, experts, masters, or gurus, because we're talking to wizards of eyes that make it happen each and every day.
They are out there working every day in the labs, on the road, in the practices, in surgery suites, making lenses, making frames.
Yes, we want to hear these back-of-the-house stories about innovation, entrepreneurship, and make you feel excited to do what you do.
We want you to be energized about the whole eye care field. And this is not your big optical program. This is done out of the passion of our hearts.
Please go ahead and subscribe to Eyetrepreneur, the podcast for Wizards of Eyes on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or your favorite app. Also, visit Eyetrepreneur.com, where you'll find our latest blogs and special video content. That's www.eyetrepreneur.com.
Yeah, I want to thank you guys for inviting me to the podcast today. You guys have some great content out there, a lot of information, different perspective on things, and to help doctors grow their practices. So thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure.
So corporate optometry started about 5 years ago. It grew to about 30,000. I have an alliance group that we're trying to help doctors with their practice to grow their practices, more of as a consulting role and vendor discounts and things like that. And that's grown to about 800 members nationwide in the last year, and providing education for them as well. I graduated from New England College of Optometry back in 2007. I always wanted to have my own practice, and it took a bumpy ride to get there in the small state of Rhode Island. So when I came out, I was really gung-ho and looking to purchase a practice and have my own practice, and it just didn't work out that way for me. Being first-generation optometrist, you kind of have to kind of do a lot of the work. And for me, what happened was a Sears sublease opened up. And at that point, you know, Sears was on the decline. Nobody wanted it. I saw the opportunity. I said, I want to have my own practice. I took it and really grew it. And then when it closed, then I had the opportunity to say, hey, I have an opportunity right now to have my own practice. So within, I think they gave me like a month's time. Opened my own private practice and kind of grew that as well. And last year recently purchased a practice from a doctor retiring and had a Warby Parker sublease in Providence where I hire a doctor at this point. So for me, it's been an incredible journey the last 14, 15 years.
As a private practitioner, you know, I always wonder, people are happy in various settings, but given the choice of commercial or private, all things being the same, like with salary and everything else, why should an OD choose one or the other?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, right? Yeah. So every OD is different in what they want, right? Some ODs love corporate practice. Some don't like private. Some wouldn't do without private, right? Or be employed versus employed. So I think if everything was equal, being the same, I think a lot of ODs kind of like to be involved in a bigger situation, feel part of something big. A lot of these companies are global. A lot of them are doing good things, charity, things like that. Doctors want to be involved. The other thing too is that a lot of doctors don't have to worry about keeping up with the latest because supposedly the industry, they're top of the industry, they're making trends and they have these advisors and things like that to kind of help them within their practice. So they don't have to keep up with marketing, insurance changes, panels, that helps a lot of them.
The business part of the practice.
That they don't want to do. Conflict resolution, hiring, firing, all that other things.
Are they afraid of the business part or just because we don't have good business education? And
we don't have good business education and we all know that, right? Yeah. So how did I do it? I kind of read all the magazines. I was interested in it. You have to want to do it, right? You have to love it. Like you guys do this podcast, you can show it. It's your passion. You love it.
Yeah.
Some doctors don't. They don't want to do that. And they don't want to, they kind of leave it up to their office manager or just say, hey, I'm just here to see patients. That's all I want to do. We don't have a good one. I mean, it has to be at the start at the schools, but by the time, you know, students get out there to purchase a practice or do it, it's a 10-year time frame. So what you learn, things have changed, right?
Yeah.
So for me, you know, within the setting, I kind of learned a lot, right? And the mistakes that I made weren't very costly because it was low overhead. So I kind of learned a lot there. And then when I had to open my own practice, I was like, oh my God, I have to kind of learn this optical stuff. So like your podcast is great to kind of get a lot of information. A lot of doctors within the setting that, you know, they want to go, they say, hey, I have a great patient-based medical practice. I'm afraid to start my own business because I don't know anything on the optical. I don't know how to adjust a frame. I don't know how to do these things. And there's a lot of resources out there, like your group. It's a great information out there on stuff, on, you know, how to find frames, purchase, you know, put on the frame board, things like that. And how to, Perry does a great job on, you know, finding great technology for your practice and things like that. That a lot of docs don't have that because they're so focused on the optometry side of the business.
So when you came into Sears, did you immediately have a full schedule or did you kind of have to work your way up to it? Tell us about kind of building your patient book. How does that work? Sure.
Yeah, so it was an established sublease, so it's been there. So established subleases versus a new sublease are totally different. And I tell doctors, hey, how long has it been there, this location? Has there been a doctor? If there hasn't been a doctor, it won't be busy, right? It takes time. So there was an established doctor. And at first, I was there a certain amount of days. I didn't know. So they was like, we need you there 5 days. It's busy practice. And it wasn't necessary to do that, right? Within three and a half days a week would have been sufficient. But I see a lot of patients per hour as well, because I choose to. And then for me at that point, I was pregnant. So the slow volume at the beginning was okay, right? But after that, you get comfortable and you get confident and then you can make the next step up. But yeah, it takes time. And I think, you know, having those lows make the highs much better, right? You know, and kind of learning that when the lows are there, you know, what can you do to kind of build that? And you build confidence in yourself because a lot of doctors are like, hey, it's slow. I don't know. I'm not confident. I think business is really about confidence and doing what you can in downtime. Now being 15 years out, I'm like, hey, it's slow. Let me get out of here. This is great. I, you know, get out of work early.
Gift of time, right?
Yes. So it's great. I say, all right, August is super busy because optometry is like that, right? Seasonal in a lot of areas. All right, I'm going to focus 100% on the business. November, December hits. I'm going to take some time off. I know the end of the month of December is going to be busy. You figure that out. So everyone can kind of figure out what is best for them, but it takes time. And I think it's a lot about confidence.
Yeah. I think a lot of times in the previous years, September, October, you're like, okay, well, did someone disconnect the phone? What's going on with that? And you do learn the seasonality, but inexperienced business people think, wow, is this it? I'm just done. The phone's not ringing. I'm done. But what you learn over time is that you're going to have times where you're slower, but you'll have times where you're proportionally busier. And that's where now December used to be a very slow month, but now it's a rather busy month because people are met their deductibles. They're at the year end. They want to spend their flexible account money. And where I've just booked for the academy, and the academy used to be in December. I was always in December, but then they moved it to, I guess this year it's in early November, but October, November, a better time to be able to take off in practice because it's just slower. HVAC businesses are slow in February and March, and that's when they book their conferences, and that's when they take vacations. So yeah. it does take some experience to be, you know, to be confident in knowing that you're not going out of business, the patients will be there. And that's why we believed in pre-appointing, because I thought at least we won't start with an empty book. You know, well, and if a few people don't show, that's okay. You can overbook that.
Well, you know, one of the, you know, questions I have is I was talking to a buddy who's in a Pearle Vision in Florida, and he's talking to me about all these issues he's coming across. He's only been out of school a few years. He's like, well, I'm at home, it's 8 p.m., I'm doing bookkeeping, and then I'm having, you know, typing all this patient data into the EHR, and I'm like, you have like legitimate private practice issues, you're learning. And I was like, well, you don't have to do all that, you know. I'm like, you can hire people to do that. It's interesting that the tools we have in private practice don't necessarily get publicized to corporate, and same with corporate, we don't hear about best practices and methodologies that could be used in private. So how do we kind of bridge that gap and play ball together better?
Yeah, I think it's playing ball, like you said, right? We all need to kind of work together, not divide the community in optometry. We're all working for the same goal. And we can all kind of learn to see. I mean, you know, what did I take? I say, hey, if you say that you're at a Pearle Vision and your biggest competitor is a Lens Crafters, whatever the case is, what are they doing good? What is that doctor doing good in that setting that you can kind of compare? And I feel like if you are looking to build or grow your business, I feel like you have to kind of know who your competitors are and what they do good and what your strengths and weaknesses are in your own practice, what you provide. And then you kind of have to know your customer base, right? Some patients, they like that fact that, hey, it's convenient eye care. I can get in. I need glasses today, right? So some doctors walk away or have the patient walk away. Where you did a great video, I think, a week ago saying, why are you letting money walk out the door? They're walk-ins, right? Walk-ins are generate revenue. Even if you're not selling glasses, it's an instant, you know, insurance exam. You're doing a good exam. You're seeing what they have. You have them back for medical if needed, or you're just seeing them again next year, pre-appointing. And you're being convenient. Patients are super happy in that aspect. And I always say, you know, if that's a patient and that's happy, get them to review you online. Get you know, try to compete with everyone else in the area because you're going to move up the Google rankings and things like that. So something so simple, and just kind of thinking outside the box on those things. But I think the industry as a whole should be able to work together and stop dividing. And I think one of the goals with the group corporate optometry was to kind of let everyone see, hey, all these doctors doing these great things are seeing these patients. We're taking care of patients. We're full-time moms, have practices, work together, you know, on advisory boards with the academy, FAAO, things like that. And we're all optometrists, and we all should be working together because it's the common goal. I mean, this is a legislative profession.
Right.
And we have a lot of enemies within optometry. So why not work together for the common good? I mean, there's a lot of things out there right now that are kind of against. And I don't think that it should be, you know, private versus corporate.
Yeah, let me ask you on that. Is there some kind of a hierarchy among commercial practice brands?
Sure.
You know, both from a patient perspective and a doctor perspective. And I'll tell you the basis of my question. In Kansas, we have something called a Mutual Protective Association, which means that if something, God forbid, happens where you're gravely ill, one of our members is going to cover for you, okay? And you never think you're going to be called on. And I wasn't called on until about 4 years ago. And it was a doctor who, 42 years old, in December, he had four kids. December of that year, he found out he had stage 4 cancer. And they called on me to work at his office. I think I've never been called on. I said, like, where is his practice? And they said, well, he's in Bonner Springs. I said, well, where? And he says, oh, he's in a Walmart. I mean, I had 3 sleepless nights. I'm thinking, like, what am I going to do? You know, so, but it was good. It was good for me because I said, okay, it's not my practice. I have to practice like he would. Don't talk about dry eye. Don't talk about macular degeneration. Just do the exams like he would want, basic exams. And the day before, I called their manager. I said, well, how many patients do you have booked? And she says, none. I said, well, do you need me to come? She said, yeah, we'll be fully booked the whole day because people call in at the last minute. And so when I saw the, when I saw these patients, they were all salt of the earth folks. And, you know, I had a guy who was,
it's kind of he was a he was country, a, country town.
Yeah. It's a little rural, more rural town, but you know, he was like an award-winning big truck. What is it called?
He's a monster truck
driver. Monster truck driver. And he says, well, last year, my ex-wife was really the monster truck winner. And I'll go into Walmart and I'll get you her copy of her, like a replica of her truck. I thought he was going to bring in this big truck. He brought me like a little toy with his ex-wife on the truck. But he was surprised. Yeah,
it was a Hot Wheels.
I still have it. So, but in any case, he was surprised I didn't follow the monster truck scene or rodeo scene in any case. But it was good for me to experience that. And I just provided, you know, the best level I could with the lowest level of equipment that they had. And I just felt, I felt bad for this guy. And he did pass away, but it was a good experience for me to see it from that side. But there was a hierarchy between patients. And they said, well, last year I went to America's Best, so I thought I'd go to a better place this year. So from your standpoint, is there a hierarchy among doctors, like where they're working? Or is it all mixed up all over?
Sure. That's a great question. Because I did post a poll in the group a couple of years ago on this. And it was true. A lot of doctors think they're within corporate optometry. There is a hierarchy, right? So a lot of them, and I think it all starts at the corporate level and how they present their brand, right? How they're advertising to patients. And it also, then it takes on for the sublease owner. How they want to practice, right? You know, some of them have a small practice, so they won't invest in equipment. And then some of them have been there for a while and they've built their practice and they'll have OCTs, retinal cameras, they'll do dry eye practices, they'll do ortho-K, they'll do scleral lenses. So it is that. And I think it really starts at the corporate level. And I think, you know, with some of them really branching out to telemedicine, I think for sales, for them to generate that sale that day, it might help them, but I think in the long run, it really hurt their brand. And that's my opinion. I could be wrong in how they think, but I think patients think a certain way. So you'll see that. And I think some other data has been that a lot of patients might go to one location because of convenience, but then they'll follow up. And I think some brands have higher patient loyalty and recall than others. In the past data, it's been about 32% patients year to year return. And then the ones that you see that that kind of rotate through will go from one corporate to another. So that has been something as well. But and then within the industry, it's true. It's out there.
So it hurt their brand.
I really think it starts at the corporate level. Yeah.
Hurt their brand to have medical? Is that what you were saying? Or did I misunderstand that?
Corporate level. Yeah. Corporate opticals have medical. They do medical. There's a lot of OCT, a lot of lens crafters, doctors that have very busy practices that will have OCT, dry eye, sclerals, things like that. They'll do Walmarts. You know, some of the locations sometimes because of space. And some of them don't even take insurance. Like the Warby Parker location, there's a space issue, number one. It's small. It's one lane. I mean, the volume is high there with the other doctor there. But it's also, it's a college town. So we're seeing a lot of 20-year-olds. They're not medical. And the other thing is they're all self-pay. So it's just, you know, they're paying out of pocket. We're not taking certain insurances. That's another thing. With, like Costco's is self-pay. So
they're not insurance.
Without insurance.
But they take DSP for the optical part, though, don't they?
Sure, some of them, yeah. So, but the doctor, like at Warby Parker, it's all self-pay. And a lot of patients are happy to do that. And that's a model that I think a lot of ODs should kind of look at, especially if they're looking to drop vision plans and they're saying that's the demise of, or thing of optometry, reducing fees and things like that, is looking at that model. Because what I've learned from it is they say, hey, I have IMED, we don't take it. Hey, the exam is X amount of dollars. I'm going to write your receipt, itemized receipt, and you're just going to submit it to them. They'll reimburse you. And there's software out there too, like Anagram, that can help with that.
Question, in terms of national advertising for eye care services, does corporate dictate down to, you know, certain geographic locations what an eye exam should cost? How does that work with kind of this international marketing going on?
Yeah, great question. So a sublease owner is independent. They dictate their fees and things like that. What I've said to doctors within the group, and I've written a lot of articles on this with corporateoptometry.com, is first of all, you're not, if you're the cheapest eye exam, you're not going to have higher volume. Okay. We have an article written on that. The second of all is it has to kind of go make sense, right? If their average, if their base price or per patient transaction is $200, right? They're not high end. Then you kind of have to be there, but you don't have to be the lowest in the area, right? So again, with that higher C and how they advertise, it should be there. And I think doctors need to kind of, have confidence in themselves, or what they provide to patients, and how they're giving their services and the equipment that they have to evaluate their chair time and give their fee. An exam should not be $30, $40. It should not be free for your services, right? You need to make sure that you take the time to understand that, because staff costs goes up, your rent keeps going up over the years. It starts low, it goes up, you add more time to your office. A lot of offices are open 7 days a week. You have to really account for all that as you're staffing the office and things like right. that. And
how does America do it though, with the free eye exam?
Yeah, so the America's best model is an employed model. So they dictate what they want. So sublease owners are a little different, yeah. They kind of do that where they kind of bring in the patient to be able to have that volume. So that's
salary
their model.
And it doesn't matter. It's salary.
Correct. Their salary. Yeah. They're seeing a lot of patients to do that salary though. Yeah. So, and I think they've been pretty transparent, National Vision, about, having a higher salary, but you have to work for it. So some doctors, yeah. And that conversation's come up numerous times in the Facebook group. And some doctors don't like that, but other doctors like it. They're happy to work there. They have benefits. They can work four days and be full time. A lot of them have opportunities to kind of move up in a management role, and some don't like it and they leave.
So I have a question about, and this goes to inclusion for corporate optometrists. So I'm sure there's lots of corporate optometry CEs. There is conferences dedicated to corporate. It could be considered a brainwashing event. I think you were trying to hire Dr. Brill, a corporate optometrist, to come work in private practice. What happened was, over 20 years, their brain went to mush. And so obviously that's not a good-
Or mush.
Mush. Same thing. And so how do we include, corporate optometrists into relevant current education? That way, if they want to work corporate, if they want to work private, if they want to have a hybrid, they're still up to date on everything. Without
Correct.
Degrading, I'm saying, look, where have you been?
First of all, I think it starts with the OD, right? You have to be motivated to kind of see the next thing. Right. I've been in a lot of private practices where I'm like, I purchased this private, and like after a while, you kind of like just coast, right? You don't want to learn anything new.
Yeah.
And so me being in younger D in this area, I'm like, okay, I got to do myopia management. I got to get outside my comfort zone. I got to learn sclerals. Right. But within corporate optometry, there was no information out there in the past. There was no data. Just on contracts, negotiations, how to build a medical model in a practice, until this group came out. And I saw this need. So I have the website. Most of the articles are up there. But I'm very proud to say that within Expo West, I will be speaking on best practices and finally getting some traction in the industry with other shows to be able to speak there too. Now, this is pro corporate OD. That has always been the focus. It is not to say, hey, you got to work 7 days a week to make sure your optical manager makes quota. This is about the corporate OD and building a practice and being self-employed. If you want to be employed, that's great. But just, to have a good salary. I've had a lot of doctors come to me with contracts for an employed location. I know, because I've seen different contracts, I've reviewed over 100 contracts, and I said, they come to me with this contract, and I say, from this company, and I say, you know what, why don't you ask them for a 10K bonus? Why don't you ask them for another $20,000 and come back to me and say,
why are they trying to screw the doctor?
Well, I think anywhere, right? I mean, you're always going to try a lower thing.
Yeah.
If they don't know, and if doctors don't know, because there's no business thing. So they've come to me and I've been happy to help them. You're part of the group. It's part of building optometry in general, building the OD for that. And I'm pretty proud to say that I've helped these doctors and it's been for free,
So do you think
to kind of, build it up.
Do you think they get beaten down? I mean, in terms of the culture of corporate practice, I've seen a trend where I would try to get associates just to work because we were busy. I got 8 exam rooms, 7,000 square feet, you know, and thinking like, I really need some help. So there's kind of a fear of going from corporate to private. Mm-hmm. And they feel kind of really like they're not up to speed on it. And a lot of times they aren't. And I'm wondering if there's actually somewhat like it imprinting, you know, as soon as they start working in corporate, they think in terms of transactions and encounters and not in relationships, because oftentimes they don't see the same patient back. So I just hired a new associate, and he's just right out of school. So of course he has no experience, except he was my extern for 5 months of brainwashing. So, but I was worried that, okay, if he worked at a commercial place, you know, it'd be like, just see him, just get through him, get through the patients, instead of being it more relationship-based.
Sure. That's a good misconception in the industry, yeah. Right? If you're a practice owner, right? You're building this, you're building those relationships. Again, Sears is closed almost 6-7 years. I'm still seeing those patients. I'm looking for you. I'm finding you. You're building those relationships, right? I knew from the beginning, I'm building these relationships because I want them to come see me. And one of the articles was, you know, brand identity. How do you position yourself that you're not just the doctor at Sears or Walmart or whatever, it's Dr. Sampolis's office. And that's important, right? For these doctors. But I think because of, you know, sometimes collaborating with the optical, they're focused on transactional, right?
Right.
They have these goals to meet. So sometimes that is the conversation. But also a lot of these corporations will have education for doctors on soft skills, personal skills, and how to build a patient base. Because NPS score is super important to them. And now with Google, there's a lot of information out there and they want to build up their brand and they want to build up their doctors, right? So that's important. But I think
who do you go to? And they're like, I don't know, some guy or gal at
JCPenney. Then it's really your fault as the doctor for not creating a memorable experience. The website has a lot of things out there to be able to do that, And it's, you're not seeing them for an hour. You know, I see patients 15, 20 minutes. It's a way to do so. And getting right to the problem, and being efficient, right? So that is important. And there is a basis for private and corporate, right? It is still transactional. It's still a business. You need to kind of think on your feet. You have to figure out your chair time and per patient transaction and things like that. Those are important, but I think doctors can transition out, but I think it is who you're surrounded with. So if you're in an environment where you're surrounded, any practice or anywhere, you're surrounded for the last 10 years, you've been comfortable, right? But you've been surrounded how hard things are out there, all the negatives,
right?
You kind of entail that, right? So what do I tell, you know, same thing as what with my kids. Hey, it's tough to ride a bike. You're not going to be able to ride a bike. It takes time, right? But after time, you're able to do it. And then you reflect back on how hard it was and what you did. But like I tell doctors, hey, I did it. It wasn't easy. You can do it as well. But if you're kind of imprinted on those things, you can't do it. But if people are imprinting that don't have any success that have this certain position, that's fine. But this is why the group was created to say, hey, I did it. This doctor did it. All these other people did it. Don't listen to what they don't know. You know, just do what you feel is best for you and your family.
That's part of our whole goal when we said entrepreneur. You know, we want to uplift people. We want to say there's all sorts of opportunity. Yes, there's things that are not good, but look at the opportunity side of it. You know, there was a older doctor, he's passed away now, but his office was in a Macy's. It was on the way to the bathroom. You had to cross through his optical on the way to the bathroom. Okay, now that's pretty demeaning, but people liked him and he had several different locations, you know, over the years. And, you know, and I think people did, they liked him, they knew him, but honestly, to have your office on the way to the bathroom, that's pretty demeaning.
Yeah, some of the problems with that is, in all fairness to corporate, they're in the setting and they don't have where they can do it. The company that they lease from tells them where to go.
Yeah.
So that's one thing too. So fairness for that. But I mean, as the brands build, right, they're becoming well established in how they do their design and things like that.
Gonna hit you with a quick ad here. So as you know, vision plans suck, but let's make them suck less by automating eligibility and verification of vision plans. Imagine one website that can authorize nearly all vision plans in 30 seconds or less. You don't even need to know which vision plan a patient has because we're gonna search them all. This is a service called PracticePal. It is super affordable, number one. You can either choose to pay quarterly or yearly and get out of your contract at any time. And your front desk is literally gonna kiss you because you've relieved them of a lot of crappy duties. Additionally, they have built a copay calculator. Imagine shopping on Amazon, but it's like shopping for your patient's vision benefits. Click, 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 contacts, glasses, exams, everything is calculated to your fee schedule. It is all browser-based. And you know what? Just go to the link in the show notes. You got to read about it. It's called PracticePal.
How important is evenings, nights, and weekends in corporate optometry? And the reason I'm asking is I'm working with a few cold start practices, and I'm coaching them to say, don't take insurance. You're going to be slow the first few years, but don't take insurance. In 5 years, you're going to be calling me and saying that was the best decision I ever made. But one idea is, look, if you want to open a cold start, you need to be open a lot of hours. I know my dad, he was open many, many hours in the earlier years, and that was just a way to compete. So can a private practice be open, let's say, till 8 p.m. and perhaps get some of those people that may go to corporate instead?
Yeah. So some clarification, certain brands require certain weekends. And so it's not all work 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Some Walmarts are closed on Saturdays. The doctors don't work because there is no volume in that area.
Yeah.
It's a Saturday, you know? And some are like, let's say Florida, right? Retirement area. You're going to get those doctors that are going to work, want to be there at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. And, you know, maybe they're done by 5. But then you might be in another area where, you know, it's a working, you know, young population and they get out of work at 5 and you might need to do that. So not all are the same. I think they all dictate by volume and things like that. And you can kind of negotiate that.
But, okay. So let's say you have eventually sublease 3 corporate locations. How can someone kind of build their block of corporate locations to have their little dynasty?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the great things. And I've always thought that, hey, I can grow pretty fast within this. But it all depends on the state, right? Rhode Island's a small state, so there's not a lot of locations that, you know, but like other states where they're expanding, Florida, California, things like that. Some corporate opticals are having multiple sublease owners for that. So it's really kind of establishing within the brand, seeing how you guys work together. Some of them are going to mesh better than others. I mean, I've worked with some and worked better with others in the past and or not. I think it all depends on that. But yeah, I think having multiple subleases is an option. And it's really putting on your business hat to say, hey, can I hire ODs? Do I have the right software? How do I open a practice? How do I keep building the practice? It's the same thing that you would do within, let's say, a cold start in a private practice or take on additional location demographics and things like that. Now, of course, if it's an established sublease, a doctor retires, something like that, to me, it would be a no-brainer. I was talking to one doctor who was looking to sell his corporate practice, super busy, at a low fair price. And I said to him, hey, I wish I was in the area. I said, I would buy this and I'd take it over. But it all depends on the doctors and what they want. Some doctors just want to come in and do their thing and just go home.
So let's say you're fresh out of
school. Spin the dials and go home. That's what I say.
Yeah.
Let's say you're fresh out of school. Will a corporate entity take you under their wing and say, you know, if I raise my hand, say, look, I'm fresh out of school. I don't know jack about running a sublease, but I really want to do it. Is there like a masterclass? Does someone take you under their wing? Like, how do I get into one?
It's hard to, I would say to take you under their wing. I think with the website they've created, they contact me and I say, hey, this is what you do. I have some documents, sublease download, and kind of do that and kind of advise them on that. Like, let's say you take on a Costco's or a Warby Parker, they're self-pay, right? So there's no insurance credentialing, no worry. All basically you need to do is have a license and have a credit card machine. You're ready to go.
Okay.
Right. And you take on a lens crafters, let's say there's a lot of insurance, you know, or likely in Florida, you need to be on Medicare. That takes a while. Right.
Yeah.
But you can backbill.
Okay. What about
There is no thing. That's why the group was created to give them information and help them out there.
What about corporate oversight? Are they ever like breathing down your neck saying, no, you screwed this up, you said this, you advertised that, or hey, your carpet's dirty. I don't know. Just are they?
Sure. Of course, we're going to be honest on this podcast, right? There are some. And some of them are, it's good leadership and some of it's bad leadership, you know? And then you'll see it within the group. It kind of goes through waves, right? And doctors complain. But by the time the doctors get to the group and complain is usually when they've had it, right? So, but then they're probably getting pressure from somewhere else. And the easiest thing sometimes is really to go with the doctor, where it's kind of sometimes thinking outside the box and other things that need to be done. You know, I think doctors need to know how to handle that conflict resolution. And one of the great things is within the group, some of that stuff has stopped because now they have a voice that comes out. It doesn't look good for the, you know, recruiting department, right? Doctors aren't going to take on if they have a bad reputation. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proud to say this group is able to give them a voice and they're able to be anonymous if they choose to be.
What is the percentage of men and women and part-time, full-time in commercial practice or corporate practice now?
Sure. Yeah. So I have data on from the AOA for private practice owners.
Okay.
About 32% are females. Within the corporate practice, I did some data information a couple of years ago. Walmart had the highest female sublease owners, multiple sublease owners. Right now, one of the things is they're going to schools saying the employed is better for females, which I kind of disagree on. I say, if you want to do it, you can do it. But yeah, I mean, it's part-time. It's hard to say whether it's female or men because some of them are doing different jobs. Some of them are working in private, some are working in corporate.
I see.
You know, if you were going to wave a wand and change something within the corporate environment, what, you know, paradigm shifts need to happen so ODs can keep maintaining higher and higher salaries, work-life balance, et cetera?
Yeah, I think they really need to get ODs involved in leadership. They need to, you know, sometimes bring that up. And it really starts with leadership. Some of these leadership need to really have a voice for their ODs, right? We bring up issues and sometimes it doesn't get funneled up. I think some of these leaders need to really step up in the industry and help their doctors within their practices.
Now, is there does Costco have like a doctor's association where they have a Zoom once a month and everybody can, you know, talk about stuff, or how do you guys collaborate between different brands?
So usually it's just the doctor, like a doctor talking to the head doctor of the company, right? Or some of them will have like meetings and things like that. But most of them don't. They don't have their own little islands and things like that. So the Facebook group has been a great way to kind of bring them together where they never had that information or collaboration before.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, even with like EHRs, I mean, there's Facebook groups for EHRs, you know? There's mom groups for dogs who are Australian Shepherds, you know, there's a group for everything.
So right now, 8% of American private practices are being purchased by private equity, and it's going to probably end up being a little bit more than that. And they're buying usually, I would say, the better practices. They're not buying, you know, one doctor, one tech, one exam room, $400,000, gross, and $100,000 collected revenue. They're not buying that practice. They're buying practices above $850,000, above $1 million, you know, maybe multi-million dollars. And now private practice doctors are really employed and, you know, and probably seeing some of the characteristics of an optical-based practice, especially like a My Eye Doctor, where they're known to rebrand immediately, change everything, and now the doctor's an employee. Are you seeing some of those questions that corporate ODs really would ask now being asked by private equity docs?
That's right. Yeah, it's huge. And I did present one of those things in the group saying, hey, is private equity corporate optometry? And a lot of doctors in the survey said, yes. I mean, I've gotten some negative feedback from outside sources on that, but ideally it's corporate optometry. When, the definition is not owning the optical and, so I really do think it's a form of it.
Right.
So it's that. And you know, it's changing in the industry right now. I think corporate optometry is only 30% of doctors practicing. So it's going to grow. And I think private equity is a form of that, that will grow as well. Do I feel like, hey, optometry is over? No. And you're right. They're buying the busier practices. It makes more sense to be able to employ these doctors. And some of them are optical minded, but some of them are also medical minded, because now they're making money off of the doctor doing these medical procedures or doing this medical testing. They'll make more off that versus the vision plans. They're able to keep the patients in there.
Because usually the private practice doc is in the back, kind of more in a leadership role, say, we need to do this, versus thought of as, okay, that's just the docs in the back, just get them to do this and get them to do that. You know, the tail wagging the dog in terms of the private practitioner now being bossed around versus the private practitioner being kind of the leader of the practice. So I can see that there would be a little bit of friction there potentially.
Potentially, yeah. But I think it's the same thing within the corporate brand. I think each brand is going to be a little different in how they present and what they want from their doctors. Some of are more medical minded within the private equity, because I mean, it makes sense, right? You're going to increase that revenue. How are you going to increase revenue within the industry? I think the data is 17% is medical model. I mean, that's where their revenue comes from. Huge opportunity to grow, right? So if they think like that, they can kind of do that. And then they can really grow it. But the other thing is too, they're also paying these doctors from the contracts that I've seen higher. So they need, and they're giving them raises each year. So they need to kind of figure out how to increase that revenue each year to do that. And that's one way to do it is through that. But they're not also, they can't afford to have, you know, 2 for $99. They can't, a lot of these corporate, they can't do that to stay ahead. That's why online is really increasing. And you say that number where a lot of these practices, you know, 400, 500,000, and the magic number in the industry is like 30% is going to be your net. But a lot of smart doctors can really get it to be about, you know, 40% or so to increase that net, or 45%. If you're a business savvy doc and can kind of cut corners, a lot of these older practices, there's huge opportunity because they're not doing the medical model. They were overbuying frames. You know, they didn't have a good recall system. They were paper. I mean, there's a lot of things. So I think, again, doctors need to have some confidence that they can really go in there and you can kind of compete. If you worked in the setting and then you wanted to go into your practice, you already know what your competition's doing, right? You already have a head start. So you're kind of knowing what their model is and what they're doing.
You know, I read a lot of threads just in different groups. Dr. Brill just mentioned private equity is potentially considered a different form of corporate optometry today. And I read threads about, oh, well, staff love this corporate optometry model, or they hate this one, or Walmart's great, but America's Best is bad. And someone else will completely say something different. How can the staff employment experience be a delightful one? And how do we make it one?
Yeah, I think it really starts. I mean, if you have to be the leader in the office, right? So you want to have a good relationship with the staff there, right? I mean, some people you can work with, and then sometimes you can't. And what I tell some doctors is, if you're not able to work with them, and you know, just call it up. That's their job. I mean, you are the sole reason why that practice keeps running, why it keeps rolling. So, you know, the doctor has to be happy, and then kind of working with the staff too, as well. But you got to kind of find the means. It's you know, working together.
What are generally the staff roles within a corporate, busy corporate setting? Just like front desk, tech, kind of describe them.
Sure. So a very busy practice where, let's say, a doctor has multiple LensCrafters, subleasers, or Walmart, they'll have an office manager and then manage all of them, try to hire staff for tech, front desk. Some will do insurance billing, things like that. The other side is working with the optical staff, right? So they have their goals, they have their thing. It's really a partnership, right? And it has to work both ways. So you can have a super busy setting and then have, you know, let's say a bad doctor and a great optical, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Great doctor, bad optical. It really works together. It's the same thing in a private practice.
Right.
And I'll say my success within over the years, or even now within my private practice and the corporate practice, is really the staff. The staff has makes it or breaks it for you and makes your life easier or harder. So I have a great office manager where she really works like it's her own, and I appreciate it and I reward her for it. Where I can go on vacation and there's any issues, she's there. But you have to really find, you have to really find that person that really kind of works it as their own. And it's hard to find people like that, that really care about that and to really, you know, help grow your business. So I've been very successful because of really my office manager, who's saying, I have to give credit. I can't say, hey, I'm the best, because I'm not.
You mentioned this word vacation. I'm not familiar with that word.
Yeah, so I went away. I went away for a wedding in Greece. I went short this time, but yeah, she was able to just, you know, hold the fort down, any issues, things like that. And it's been great. I mean, for that aspect, if I have to, you know, leave early, take my kids and things like that and try to have some kind of balance, it's been very helpful. But she needs her time. She has her time as well. And I think you need to kind of respect that. I think a lot of doctors don't realize how good their help is in their practice. A lot of times we see any practice, corporate or private, we see the patient for 15 minutes and then that's it. They don't see you again, but they talk to the office manager throughout the year to order their contacts, any questions, any other things. I think we need to know where our value is, and they're building a lot of the relationships sometimes with those patients too.
I want to talk about referrals within corporate optometry. Where is, let's say someone has just decided not to do medical, not to do anything fancy. They stick to the basics. That's fine. That's their scope of practice they decided on. Where are those referrals going? Cataracts, specialty contacts, rigid lenses, neuro stuff, weirdo fits, dry eyes. Where does that stuff go? Is it going to OMDs? Or elsewhere?
Yeah, so a lot of them send to MDs, right? And that's a huge opportunity to really co-manage together and work together. And I think if we all work together, then instead of private practitioners and corporate saying, hey, we don't work together because you're corporate, I'm private, they can find the opportunity, right? So
yeah,
they should be able to do it. So I always reach out to my local corporate ODs and say, hey, if you're not doing dry eye, I just started the Dry Eye Center of Rhode Island. I have all this stuff. I'm going to see them. You know, I'll send them back to you. Or, hey, I just got a new OCT. If you want to do that, get it fast. Instead of have them a week to get out, I'll send it back to you. You know, you want to get the evaluation fee, that's all yours. I think it's very important to collaborate and then to do that. And you can do that through your reps. It's very easy if you don't just want to pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm. There's a VisionWorks about, I don't know, 5 minutes away from our practice. And patients would go there for their Medicaid eye exam, but for some reason they didn't provide Medicaid glasses, and they would always just come in with their prescriptions, and we'd fill, you know, 3 or 4 Medicaid glasses a day from this practice. I don't know if that practice said, hey, go see Brill down the street, or if they found us ourselves, but it was such an opportunity to, you know, to collaborate that way. You know, Dr. Brill calls it being the referral hero. If you refer to another optometrist because you caught something, they see you as the hero. You're the good person. You found it. You saved their life.
And the patients.
Yeah.
But that's optometry's dirty little secret. We don't intra-refer profession-wise. Everybody's worried about
stealing the patient.
And I tell them, look, you can shear the sheep many times, but you can only skin it once. If I never want to have another referral, I will steal the patient. If I want to have a lifetime of referrals and make them look good and make the patient happy, then just share those patients. And they're worried that you'll walk into my office and I've got a nice office. So, you know, they're going to like, wow, I'm just going to stay here. And what they don't know is, even if someone says, look, I'm never going back to that target, I'm never going back there, I'll say, that's fine. I'm never going to see you for your eye exam, because that's not ethical in terms of my terms. Sure. And then sometimes they leave me because they don't like that answer either. Optometry needs to grow up a little bit. This is my editorial. Optometry needs to grow up a little bit about referrals. Even ophthalmologists who hate each other will sometimes say, you need to go see this other doc, you know, who's
a UVI specialist. Yeah, that's true. That's a great point. You know, I partnered in the past where I was new to the area. I tried to partner with ODs. They wouldn't refer. They wouldn't do this.
Yeah.
And then I ended up partnering with an optician, a couple opticians, right? So I said, hey, I'm new to the area. I'm not really that busy or whatever.
Yeah.
If you send me your patients for that, because you don't have a doctor, I'm happy to see them. As long as the patients know that I know that you referred them, I'm happy to send them back for your field to get glasses, things like that. And those are always, and then, you know, it's up to the patient, but we send them back. We try to be loyal, try not to steal the sale per se. Some doctors will do that, and you're right, and then it ends. But you build a relationship, right? So when something comes up in the future, like you said, you filled in for that doctor because he was sick with cancer, you're building those relationships where they can help you one time or another if something happens. There's been times where, hey, instead of like going to the lab and paying, you know, $20-$30 to fix these, they fix them for you. They help you out, right?
Yeah.
And those are things that I didn't know. And a lot of optometrists don't know until they do it and learn how to do it. So thinking outside the box and big picture is good. And like you said in the past, I've had a doctor right now, we just got a being deployed. And I said, yeah, I'll fill in for you. No problem. I mean, I just want to let you know, I have two practices. I'm self-employed. I just want to make sure you're okay with that. And, you know, so they don't think that you're, you know, stealing patients or whatever else. And I said, I'm happy to help you because if I ever get in a jam, I said, I want to be able to call on you to help me out.
Yeah,
you know, that's what it's all about. I said, I'm not really looking for money. I'm not really looking to, you know, build a brand within your office for time that I'm going to do while you're deployed to help you out. But really to if I need something, you know, something happens, I got young kids, I need you to, you know, give me a handshake that you'll help me out too.
Yeah.
I call it business reciprocity. And it's pretty straightforward, but optometrists are wary of that. And it's interesting, they'd rather refer to ophthalmology than to optometry.
But ophthalmology has opticals as well, and they kind of can do the full scope. And why not help each other? Why are we fueling ophthalmology that kind of uses that income to kind of, you know, not help us expand our scope and things like that sometimes? I mean, there's others that do and don't, but I think we should be able to do that and help each other. And I find opportunity, you know, who's around me, who's practicing what locations. How can we work together?
You know, get it.
There's some things that I do
well. I get it. But a lot of ODs, they don't feel that good about themselves or their practice. And now they're going to refer it onto somebody else. And I think that's the basis of it. It's not that they don't trust us. They just say, you know, I've never invested in my practice. I don't have OCT. I don't have all the toys. I don't want to do dry eye. I just want to refract. And they want to keep it simple. And they have a hard time. If they refer an ophthalmologist, they look like, well, they're better than I am, so I might as well just refer to them, and especially to referring to an OD in an ophthalmology office. So I know I've had a couple say, well, I'll fill in for you. And I'm thinking like, they're all on paper. They don't have any automated phoropters. They have no clue what I'm talking about. I'm thinking, no, that really won't work. They don't know how to open up and analyze an OptiMap. I'm thinking like, they would feel so bad coming in because they would say, I am back in the 1980s, and they are back in the 1980s. And they have not advanced or invested themselves or their practice. So,
yeah, well, you have to really do that. And you're right. It's all about confidence. I really do believe that. It's kind of having some confidence yourself and getting outside your comfort zone and continue to learn and evolve. I mean,
I tell my staff, my job is to get them out of their comfort zone. And because most of them are millennials, they'll say, okay, but then we master it. And I think, hey, and then I have to get you out of your comfort zone again. So that's kind of the push and pull, especially for young employees, that we get them to be very well trained, but we have to push them out of their comfort zone. I don't know if ODs like to be out of their comfort zone. It's scary. So when we when we went from manual phropters to the Marco 5100s, you know, it was out of our comfort zone. But later on, you would never want to go back. And the same thing for using a scribe. And I don't want to see a patient ever without a scribe. You know, so they do so much. And so we have to work together better. And I'm glad that now corporate optometry not appear to be second fiddle to private practice. And the middle zone is maybe some private equity practices where they're understanding net promoter scores, they're understanding about reviews. You know, I'll see somebody that's got, oh, they got a great practice, but they got five reviews. How'd you hold back from getting reviews? And I'll ask these people that are very enthusiastic, they drive 7 hours to get to me for a dry eye, if they get a review, and about 1 in 100 will give you a review because they have high expectations now. And, you know, they're just stingy about writing a review. So I know there's other ways to force it, but I don't like forcing it. I, I'd rather have 4.5 instead of all fives where they look phony. So usually people like telling a story on a good review.
Of course, I think it's important. And reviews are the new thing, right? Word of mouth. I'll ask my new patients that found us, how did you find us, right? Within even a corporate setting, private, usually it's on Google, or sometimes it's done on marketing from the corporate entity. Hey, I needed a Saturday appointment. You guys had it. Or I heard that Orby's running a sale, Costco's running, whatever the case is. So you're going to get different patients, right? Some patients want the corporate practice, some want the private, different demographics, things like that. So I think it's just finding what you like as a practitioner, how you want to practice. I like having one foot on one side, one on the other. For me, I've been very fortunate within optometry. And I think there is a lot of future for optometry, whether you want to be private or corporate. It's just going to take a little more time than it was before, just hanging up a shingle.
Yeah, we have to look out for all the opportunities out there. And that's I'm sure you're familiar with the SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And I think that's where we can help each other out. I know I could go into a practice and instantly I can make them a lot more money, you know, just because they don't see it. They don't walk in the front door and their purchasing habits are established a long time ago because the lab rep brings in, you know, Tootsie Rolls or donuts once every quarter. And I think, you know, those donuts, doc, they cost you a lot of money. Okay. You ever look at your lab bill? And you could be sourcing your lenses for a lot less money and at the same high quality or maybe even better quality than some Thinalens that's a name brand. And maybe you might have to invest in an edger or having a lab and training your staff.
You know, a lot of doctors that consider private and within a corporate, like, again, they're nervous because they don't understand that, right? Yeah. And what I've noticed is you can just say, hey, the lab down the street at Lab X said they're going to give me this price. Can you guys match it? We're going to match it. We'll do better. And we'll give you free shipment every day. You know, you can do it. And you have to kind of really do that and not just say, okay, I'm fine with it and not talk about it. You need to bring it up within a year, every year, every 6 months, do a business review with your reps, get the reps in there. They'll give you a lot of information sometimes to help you.
With that note, let's agree to all work together here. And I think that the profession will be stronger and we will minimize those external forces that we think we can't control. So, all right. Well, thank you so much, Maria. Let's meet again. Perry, I think, had to do something else. So we'll just sign off now. We'll work on helping each other out as much as we can.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
It's Perry. I'm back. And yes, I had to run, take care of a few things early. Leaving you with one thing, maybe two. If you're not on our email newsletter yet, go to the link in the show notes to subscribe. We really throw down some unique content, such as how to decorate your practice, top 10 things to implement in your practice right now. We send out emails once a week. These are not spam. These are like golden nuggets of knowledge that you can take back into your office and apply right away. Also, you'll find our link to join our Facebook group in the show notes as well. It's a little over 2,000 members of just like straight nail-biting people who are anxious to get shit done in their practices. I hope to see you there, and thanks again for listening.